Coffee's ready. Guest is ready. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome back to the Prodigy Podcast. We are on episode 42 and today I have someone on that everyone will know very well if you are at least have a foot in the UK BJJ scene. It's Nia Blackman. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I thought a way to kind of start this interview would be to ask you around your experiences on how you would describe BJJ. So I think everyone, it's kind of a difficult question to start off with, but it's something that I find quite fascinating because different people have different answers about how would you describe what BJJ means to you now? And what do you think that how you describe it now has changed from when you first started?
I think currently BJJ, it's a mix of things. It's an outlet, I think, because I do a lot of school, you know, A-levels, just school in general, it's quite stressful. So it's always been an outlet for me. But then I guess I kind of see it as maybe a career as well, like training, competing. So that's probably how I see it now, like career stroke, you know, competition based. Whereas when I started BJJ when I was 7, and I started traditional jiu-jitsu when I was about 4 or 5. So back then when I started, it was just for self-defense purposes and a way for like my parents to, you know, get me to use up some energy because I had a lot of energy as a kid.
Would you say that it's that kind of split that you were talking about, although you use it as an outlet now, do you think that the fact that you almost have to treat it a little more professionally, not that you weren't doing it as well, but the fact that you see it, your perception of jiu-jitsu as a sport, as something that you do, you almost perceive it as something a bit more professional and as a career, that it becomes kind of less fun? Or has that not diminished at all for you?
When I say like see it as a career, it's more like a potential career because like I'm only 17, so I try not to put like too much pressure on it in that kind of way. So I kind of try not to think about it like that. But then I think as I'm nearing like 18, I'm kind of to like see it in that light. But I don't think it's changed how much fun I have. I think it just makes me want to take it more seriously.
And how was it's been a hot minute since I did my A-levels. How do you find as someone who is kind of, you know, studying and doing jiu-jitsu as well, finding that balance? Is that something that you've always kind of managed to do as you've kind of grown up doing jiu-jitsu, or is it something that you're tackling kind of now, or kind of as you're doing things like exams?
I think I've always managed it quite well. I'm doing like maths, chemistry and biology for A-levels, so it can get a bit stressful sometimes, but I think what made it tricky was actually the pandemic, kind of like all the COVID restrictions and then not getting to train as much and, you know, being off school because people were getting ill and having to isolate. I think that's where like it became difficult to manage. But as soon as everything kind of got back to normal, it kind of all just fell back into the place. And the second I really started training consistently again, that's when my grades started to improve and I was back in like a routine. I think for me, it's just about having a routine. That's where I tend to thrive the most. So as long as I kind of have a routine I can stick to, then it all flows pretty smoothly.
That's really interesting that actually it was almost spending less time on schoolwork that actually, or less having less opportunity to work on school, that actually improved your grades because you're finding that that routine and that kind of, and also that outlet for jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, I'm no expert in maths, chemistry. What were the other two?
Biology.
And biology. But you haven't gone for some easy ones. And no. That's about as far as my expertise goes. How have you kind of, is that things that you're also passionate about? Because I'm really interested in the fact that we know, especially our younger athletes, we know them as athletes, but we don't really know that much about them in terms of what their other interests and things are. Are those things that you've always been interested in?
Yeah, I've always been quite like academic from a young age. Like, I think because I did a lot of sports, people will be like, oh, she just plays sports. But yeah, I've always been quite academic. Like, I did quite well in my GCSEs. And yeah, I really like science and maths. I also quite liked school in general, to be honest, when it came to like all the different subjects. That's why I think it was hard for me at A-levels, just because I had to whittle it down. Because I also quite like art and like history and English. But I kind of went down the more like STEM-based route because I kind of just wanted to learn more about it and kind of wanted to develop my knowledge on that more.
Is that something that, I mean, I think you almost listed every subject conceivable that you can study, but is the STEM route that something that you're really interested in kind of carrying on?
Yeah, I did my university applications this January, and I just got like almost all of my offers in. So yeah, I'm looking to study sports and exercise medical science at university. That's the plan.
Wow. And I suddenly feel like if any of those universities, if they have a jiu-jitsu team, they are rubbing their hands right now.
Yeah, UCL is where I want to go, and I got my offering from there, and they have a jiu-jitsu league, so I was just like, oh, perfect.
Suddenly, I like the fact that when it's things like the armed forces kind of competitions, and then you've got the university leagues, like suddenly these exclusive kind of, well, exclusive clubs, if you will, of jiu-jitsu, and suddenly you're like, right, I'm in.
Yep, perfect. Literally, I was like, oh, it all fits in quite nicely. Like, I'll still be able to train and all of that stuff. I'm quite excited.
And I guess with things like university beckoning as well, does that mean that you're looking to kind of almost merge the two, that kind of your thing, you being an athlete and you studying is kind of coming together in terms of being kind of like a Lachlan Giles-esque person of being knowledgeable on both how to break and fix people all at once?
Yeah, I feel like it's just like so important to get your education, like even if you want to do sports or even whatever career you want, or if you're going a career, you usually go to university, but whatever you do, like, I feel like education, like knowledge is power. That's something my parents always reinforced to me as a kid. And it was just like, you know, get your education, get your degree, make sure you're kind of stable in that aspect in life. And then but side by side, if you're really passionate about it, you can also do whatever else you enjoy.
Well, you've touched it on already, but it almost, the Blackmans are almost, synonymous, got there in the end, with the word support, I think, in jiu-jitsu, and with kind of rallying behind their family. And how important has that been for you as you've grown up, both in like education and your personal life and jiu-jitsu and just everything, in having that kind of continued like safety net and support of your family?
They are literally the biggest support system in literally every single aspect of my life. It's actually crazy. Like, just, yeah, it's amazing. Like, I feel so lucky, grateful, fortunate about, like, just my parents and just the majority of my family members, even in my extended family. They just nothing but support and just love, and literally, it just makes me feel so, like, confident into whatever career path I want to go into, or just whatever I want to do with my life or in my life in general. I can always just talk to my family about it, talk to my parents, and just feel supported. It gives you just so much confidence because you're like, I can do anything, really. Like, that's something they always drummed into me as a kid, and they always made sure I knew, and like, I just felt supported, and that Like, I can do literally anything if I set my mind to it and if I work hard.
Do you always felt, not in the sense of overconfidence, but have you always felt confident in yourself? Or do you think that that is something that has come from both, you know, being successful, but also being supported and being pushed to do those things and to try your best?
Definitely, definitely. There's so many things I think that have gone into confidence. I feel like, obviously, my family and my support just from a young age, really. It's just like the way they, you know, the thing is, they put me in a lot of sports as a kid. I think that's something that really contributes to my confidence, I guess, is that when I was young, I used to do like netball, swimming, gymnastics, cheer, dance, like just athletics, as many sports as I possibly could. And, you know, I think that's really important for young kids, just to let them try as many sports as they can, compete in as many sports as they can. It taught me like loads of life skills. And then my parents were just there all the time. My siblings as well were with me, doing it all with me. So it all just kind of like, you know, melded together and just brought my confidence up. And, you know, even in my schoolwork, like tutoring, just supporting me, helping me get the best grades I possibly could, all of that. And yeah, I think it's made me a pretty confident person today.
And there is that wonder with kind of, I guess, I was going to use the word, I guess, kid athletes and kids who compete and do well, that you kind of alluded to it before, that there's this pressure on them to then chase this one avenue. Have you always been reminded of the fact that, you know, this is always your choice and you never have to kind of restrict yourself in terms of what you want to do?
Literally. My parents actually avidly made sure that I knew that I can do whatever career path, literally whatever I want, just as long as I was working hard and, you know, I felt passionate about it. And I think that's why I think I love jiu-jitsu so much, is because I've never really felt like this has always been my choice to do it. Like, mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing, is I was put into so many different sports just for like overall fitness, you know, find out what I enjoy, that it kind of like, over the years, it just, I guess, got narrowed down, and I just, whatever I wanted to put my energy into. And yeah, it was jiu-jitsu. That's why I never really felt restricted. And I think that's why, yeah, I'm able to be so passionate about it today, is because it was just 100% my choice.
What came as the close, was there one, if you had to kind of rank all the sports that you tried, what was the one that came second place to jiu-jitsu?
Oh, it's a tie for second between gymnastics and swimming.
That, I mean, of all of the sports that you could have named, those are the two that I always think that if you're going to get a kid to do, as like when people talk about, I don't know if you've probably heard this conversation before around where people say, well, what's the perfect base? If you're going to give your kid a sport to do before they do jiu-jitsu, what are the best sports to do? And I think number one is gymnastics and probably number two is swimming.
I think because I started those two off, like jiu-jitsu at a really early age. Like, I think my parents wanted, obviously swimming is like such an important life skill, you know, like if you're out, if you're in the ocean by the sea, like swimming, like you should always know how to swim. And then gymnastics for, I guess, strength, flexibility, and then obviously like jiu-jitsu or martial art for self-defense. I think those were kind of like what my parents went on, like the basis, I guess. And then it just kind of built from there.
Don't you find it baffling that there are some people who just, when you meet them and you go to a beach or something, they go, oh no, I don't know how to swim.
I know, I'm like, really? Like, wow. I think even my mom, she didn't know how to swim growing up, but as she got to an adult, she learned, because I just feel like it's just a life skill. Like, I think it's so important. Just like, obviously we live on land, so like walking, but I feel like, yeah, swimming, it's just, you should just know how to do it.
It just, like, I get it that some people will look at what we do, you know, they'll look at jiu-jitsu and go, not interested. What's the point of me learning that? But come on, like, the swim, it blows my mind.
I feel like, I guess, for people who maybe don't have access to swimming pools and swimming,
of course,
you know, then obviously I understand. But I mean, if you can have the access, then yeah, you should learn how to swim. It's also good for just overall fitness.
Hell yes. There's, if you want to get, if even as a jiu-jitsu person, if you want to feel really, really shit about your cardio, go and visit like a swimming pool. I would recommend probably around the time of about opening. So whether that be 6:30 or 7 a.m., mm-hmm. that's what I would describe. And this is by no means an insult as the pensioners club. And I've been there, and there have been, I've done three laps. And then I have to, you know, take a break, then carry on. And there are people who are twice, if not three times my age, who are up and down the entire time I'm there. They don't stop, they don't take a break, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I used to swim in the mornings before school. And yeah, they would go rounds, like, and it'd be for a good like hour or two. I'm like, they're like ducks, like they just keep swimming. It's crazy.
You start to wonder if you're doing, if like my mum sent me to all those swimming classes, and I'm like, did I get taught swimming wrong?
They're really fast. They're faster than you'd expect them to be as well. Like, they're quite fast. I feel like I'm so competitive. So, like, if you put me in a pool next to someone, if you put me in a, like, it's just in me. Like, I'll have to give it my all to beat them. And then I realized, like, there was, like, one of, the, like, an older man. And, like, he was almost catching up. I was like, damn, I've got to step my game up.
And then there's the thing of which lane do you pick? Because I'll never be confident enough to go anywhere near that fast lane. But then I don't want to be in the slow lane. Straight in the fast lane. Are you straight in the fast lane?
Straight in the fast lane. I don't know. It's just that if I'm stuck behind someone and I'm swimming and I'm like in my zone, I'm just going to get frustrated. And I'll just lap around them and I don't want to kick in their face. So I just, you know, hop in the fast lane.
It's a polite thing.
Yeah. Like, I'd feel so bad swimming around someone, because then you got to click and then you're just splashing in it. I can't, no, because then I would just stay behind them swimming slow and I'd end up getting like annoyed at myself.
It's one of those things that definitely I would recommend anyone to learn if they haven't already. But also, it's one of those things, I think, almost like any sport, a bit like jiu-jitsu as well, that if a school has a chance to like give the kids a chance to go and do every week, they should definitely get to do.
Yeah, I think my primary school had it. There was like, it was right close to like a swimming bar, a swimming pool, and they took us like every Thursday, I think, in like year 5 and year 6.
That's so cool. When I look at you training, you competing in jiu-jitsu, and how that's kind of developed over the years, and competing on a bigger stage, when was the first time that you did step up and compete at a big competition, whether it be Euros, Worlds, Pan Ams, wherever it may be? And do you remember kind of how that felt as someone competing on a bigger stage? Were you conscious of that?
This is actually kind of a funny story. So it was my first ever kids pans. So it was in California at the Water Pyramid. I was about 10 years old. And I stepped out, I was terrified. Like, I probably wasn't even good enough to be doing the competition, but my mum heard about it. And one thing about my parents, they're like, yeah, just check them in. And you're like, why not, you know? And I'm like, and I was up for it as well. I was like, yeah, I've been doing this for how many years? Like, yeah, give it a go. I must go out there. I just got smoked. literally. I think I got triangled like twice. And it's really funny actually, because it was by a girl from Gracie Humaita, Leticia Ribeiro's gym. And then the next summer, I actually went out to train with Leticia Ribeiro, and I've trained at her gym for like, when I go out to California, literally for like ever since, I guess, the second time I've been out there, I always go there. And it's like, we've built up a good relationship. But prior to that, it was her, it was one of her students that just, yeah, smashed me. And I was like, damn. And that's what really made me, I was 10. And that's when I started to do more jujitsu and focus on jujitsu more. And I was like, yeah, I want to do this more. And that's when, I guess, some of the other sports started to take a bit of a backseat. And the best part of the story was that the pans, I think I did it on the 15th of February. And then the day I fought at Euros, my first adult at Euros, was also the 15th of February. So that was exactly 7 years ago since I did my first pans.
That is a very weird coincidence.
Yeah. So when I literally, the past year is just gone, because it came up in my mum's Facebook memories and she was showing me the photos. And then I looked and I was like, wait, I'm fighting today. And then it was like crazy. It was like a big marker of how far I've come, I guess.
I can't imagine what the pyramid looks like to a 10-year-old, like just the kind of the size of it and just being in that environment, that significant of a competition at 10 years of age.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was just like so many people, and so I'd never seen that many people in a room who did jiu-jitsu or knew what jiu-jitsu was. So I was just like, wow, this is crazy. Like, yeah, I was a bit like shook a little bit.
did you go back to school kind of when you got back and just be like, this is crazy, you guys don't realize what this is, how big jiu-jitsu is,
literally? And I think I got a little bronze medal, and I took it back to school and I was just like, and everyone's like, well done. And I was thinking, I don't even feel like I earned this because I just got my butt kicked. But I was just like, it's insane. And I was like, yeah, like there's so many people that do it. And I think that's what inspired me, I guess, as well, that it wasn't, when I was 10, I don't think it was as big in the UK. Like, I think about it and I see like the kids competitions now, and there's like so many little kids on the mat, like even in the kids classes at my gym, there's so many little kids. And I was just like, I don't remember there being that many when I was a kid. So it's just like, wow, it's come a long way.
The irony of the fact that even though you are so young, you can actually look at the kids and go, well, back in my day, like I only had two sparring partners or something like that.
That's the thing. Like, I was like, oh yeah. I'm like, oh, it's so long ago. And they're like, well, you're not very old. And I was like, if you put it into perspective, like I've been doing jiu-jitsu
for nearly a decade.
Over a decade.
Over a decade, like, actually.
13? I think I was 4 or 5 when I started. So like 12, 13 years.
Bet you feel old now.
Like a grandma. But that's the thing as well, like, because I've been doing it so long, my friends are like, why aren't you a black belt? I'm just like, no, it doesn't work like that. And I have to like explain to them the belt system all over again, and they all get so confused by it, the ones that obviously don't do jiu-jitsu. They're like, how does that work? And I'm just like, no, you have to go through all the kids belts. And then I just started in adult belts last year, and because they think it's just like karate.
It seems so simple to us, though.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, it's obviously you go through, you know, white, grey, yellow, orange, green, then it's blue, then it's purple, then it's brown, then it's black. And they're like, start again.
How many of your friends over the years have you managed to draw to jiu-jitsu? Is that one of the things that you've managed to do over your years, grandma, of doing jiu-jitsu?
I try and get as many into it as possible. It's annoying though, because I don't live near my gym. I live in like southeast London, whereas my gym is in east London. So it's like, it takes me about 45 minutes in the car to an hour sometimes to get to training. So it's just like, if my friends want to come, they're like, it's where? And I'm like, yeah, it's in Hackney, guys. And they're like, oh, But like there's some gyms, I guess, close to me, so I kind of recommend them to those ones. But I've got quite a few of my family friends as well, like my family friends and their children into jiu-jitsu. Like my mum, she's the biggest advocate to other parents to like get your kids in jiu-jitsu, it's so good. And my dad, like, they're always like spreading it because I feel like it is, and they've seen the benefits, and like they just want to spread it, spread the jiu-jitsu love.
I mean, it don't we all, right? And I feel like if there's any, if there's I feel like parents of jiu-jitsu competitors and people who do jiu-jitsu are probably even more talkative about it than people, adults who just, you know, happen across jiu-jitsu or just do jiu-jitsu themselves, right?
Yeah, it's cool. It's like what I love seeing as well, how my parents, like, jiu-jitsu knowledge has increased over the years, and how they'll talk to me about like training and moves. And I just think back to like when I was younger, and like my mom at competition, she just used to be like, "Go near, go near," and that's all she could say because she just didn't know what was going on. So, but now, you know, she can shout a few instructions, which is kind of cool.
Has she turned into a secondary corner?
Yeah, oh, secondary, primary, she's, you will hear my mom on literally every single video of my fights. Like, at Euros, like everyone, even in like when you go and watch the fights back on Flow, or even if you see like any of the videos, you will hear my mum. Like, that, you can hear her all the time.
That must be so helpful, because there's been so many times, you know, when you've got, if you're on Flow and you've got 6 or 12 different mats up, and you're trying to work out, oh, where's my mate on? Well, it doesn't matter what mat I'm on. If I can hear your mum, then I know that you've got to be on one of the mats.
Yep. Problem solved. 100,000,000%. You can hear my mum. Because it's actually really funny as well, because I was in the adult division. This is my first year. And my mum was like, "That's my baby." And everyone's just like, "She's not a baby." And my mum's like, "She's my baby."
You'll always be your parents' baby though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get on to the adult division stuff, because like you said, this is first time that you've competed in an adult. And what was that like now? When you look, well, let's start off with like, what, now that you look back, you've done competing as adult, as if you're not going to do anymore, but you've now competed as an adult, and that period of competing as a juvenile and as a child is closed. Now that you kind of look back on that chapter, what do you feel like you've kind of had, I guess closure is the right word. Do you feel like, yeah, I've done that right, and I did everything I wanted to do?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, because I did my first division in the adult division when I was 13, so it was like, you know, I kind of did it side by side. Like, any competition that would let me fight at adult, I would always jump at the chance. So now it kind of feels, I guess, right, like I'm actually allowed to be there, I'm supposed to be there. So it makes, and it like makes me look back at like, I guess, my lower achievements, like at Blue and stuff. And it's like, okay, yeah, I did, like, I look at my junior as well, like, what I did at Green and what I did at Orange, and I'm like, yeah, feel, like, kind of happy. Like, I got everything I wanted to get. I won everything I wanted to win in the, like, juvenile and junior divisions. So I'm like, yeah, I feel, like, pretty confident going into the adult divisions as well now. It's like a new chapter, and I'm like excited, you know,
When that new chapter kind of started, and you stepped on the mat, and you were like, was it playing in the back of your head that, yes, like, this, I'm an adult now, like this is it, kind of going forward?
I guess so. I guess I don't really feel like an adult as well, because technically I'm not. So
it's true. In the eyes,
in the eyes of the law,
you're still a kid.
In the eyes of the law, I'm still a child. So I just doesn't think even it's fully sunk in that I'm like, oh, this is the adult division, oh, I'm an adult. Especially because I think what was really cool about the Europeans is in the absolute division, all, like, I think the other girls on the podium were all teenagers as well. Like they would come up through like juvenile and all of those ranks. So I was just like, oh, like it didn't even feel like, it just felt like juvenile part two, which is kind of cool.
And is it nice seeing other people who you've seen as like as young girls growing up competing alongside you to now all of you guys in that adult division side by side still competing today?
Yeah, this is the first time I'd actually met those girls, but then we found out that we were all like around the same age and I was like, oh my God, that's so crazy.
You just somehow have managed to miss each other the entire time.
Yeah,
or they started jiu-jitsu later than you.
I think it's they were a bit older than me, so they were in the juvenile divisions above. So that's I think why we never met before. But yeah, it was pretty cool, definitely, to see like lots of young people come up through jiu-jitsu, because it's just like, oh, we're kind of like in it together, even though we're not from the same team.
And I think that's one of the amazing things about jiu-jitsu, right, is that you can kind of, even though these people are your competitors, your kind of fellow competitors, you can also kind of celebrate jiu-jitsu together and celebrate what you're doing together.
Yeah, literally, I've become friends with like so many of the people I've fought against in competition before. So I'm just like, it's nice. It feels like, you know, I feel like there's no, well, not all the time, but you know, there's no real animosity and like everyone's just for like getting better and evolving and becoming like the best, you know, athlete stroke fighter they can be.
And it would be remiss of me to mention, but given that you are kind of, you are part of this, what I would describe maybe as a second wave in female jiu-jitsu athletes in the UK, kind of, you know, we had this kind of first wave of surge from our Samantha Cooks or Fionn Davies, and now we're getting this kind of second wave of female jiu-jitsu athletes come in. Does it feel like, did you look up to these people when you were growing up and kind of seeing other competitors, other female competitors competing from the UK? And does it feel like now you have, there's so many more people competing?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of them I looked up to, and I still do, as inspiration, especially Sam. She's one of the reasons I moved to Fight Zone when I was, when I was about 14, 13, that's when I moved to Fight Zone. And yeah, Sam, like I used to do her webinars when I was about, like, I think I did my first one with her when I was about 10, and I always tried to do as many as I could, like, always like loved watching her fight, looked up to her, loved training with her so much. So it's just like, you know, to see that and have that as an inspiration and it to be so close to you as well, it's just like, yeah, it really helped with my jiu-jitsu and just my passion for it, you know. Fionn as well, she's amazing. I remember watching her at ADCC when it was like the 2019, and I was like, yeah, like I wouldn't do that. And it was so cool to see a girl from the UK like compete at that level. It was really inspiring.
Well, I mean, as a bit of, as a kind of roundabout way, now that you competed, was this your first trials that you competed in?
Yeah.
What was this, last year now?
Yeah, I never really was like, it was over lockdown that I started to kind of watch a lot of like Nogi, because that's what a lot of like the super fights were all like overflow. So I was like, oh, this looks so cool. This looks so sick. So as soon as like the gym opened up, I started doing like Nogi classes. And I was like, yeah, I like this. It's quite fun. And then obviously the trials in Poland was announced. And I was like, might as well just throw myself in, see how I do.
You did exactly what your mum did to you.
Yeah, I did it to myself this time. I was like, mum. And I was talking to her about it. And I was like, yeah. It was a good, trial run, I guess. Because it's like, yeah, women don't get the ticket in this trial. It's in the second trial. So I was like, yeah, I'd like to do this. Like, see what it's about. And yeah, it was a cool experience.
Does that mean we're going to be seeing you in the next trials then?
Yeah, 100%. My name's already down. Like, I was just like, I've tried to do as like as much Noki as I could, like super fights, X, Y, and Z. So I was just like, yeah, I think it'd be just that, you know, more jiu-jitsu experience, just expand my game. I think that's what I really like as well about Noki, is because obviously I'd always been doing jiu-jitsu, like in the gi, but then I didn't do as much Noki, or I'd do it on like a kind of more one-off basis, or like if it was, there was a gi competition and then there was like, there was a Noki division, like I'd be like, yeah, throw me in, why not? But now I've been able to kind of like study it a bit more and like train it more. And that's like, there's just so much to learn because it's actually quite different to the gi, like in some aspects. So I'm really enjoying it, you know, just being new to it and just getting to evolve and learn and see how my game is changing and how it's different from my gi game, but how I can bring aspects of it and merge the two. And yeah, just improve my jiu-jitsu as a whole.
What was there anything in particular that when you started focusing on Nogi more, that you were like, oh wow, this is actually really eye-opening, like I'm gonna really have to take a deep dive into this?
Probably my wrestling my stand-up game, because it was like there was little bits there, but I'd never really, in gi it was very much, yeah, I'll pull guard, or I'll work some passing, like the start of the fight. Like in the gi, I kind of had that down. Whereas in no gi, I think I had more of the like the ground game down. Like I could, you know, if I was in guard, I'd had an idea of what I wanted. Or if I was on top, I'd have an idea of what I wanted. But at the start of the fight where you'd kind of have to wrestle, I felt like I was just like, I was like, oh, I'm not very good at this. Or, you know, I need to work on this a lot. And that's what I've really enjoyed. I've been getting into wrestling more. And it's really fun, actually. And I was like, you know, it's a cool element that I'm happy that I'm getting to add to my game. Also, in terms of just like overall fitness, I feel like you need a lot more cardio for no gi than you actually do for gi, because I feel like no gi is so non-stop. Like, I realized, like, wow. And I guess it's made me get fitter, like, and it's made me be able to like do more rounds, I think, and just go at a higher intensity pace, which I was able to even bring into my gi game, because like I think also because of like it's slippery and like you're just going at it more, it made my cardio, like when I was doing no gi rounds just in training, and I was like, wow, why do I feel so tired after like a handful of no-gi rounds than after like all the rounds in the gi class? Like, I was like, what? And then it made me realize that, yeah, cardio is very important when it comes to no-gi, especially like if you want to be at an intense pace.
And is that something now that you're like, when I compete in the gi, I'm gonna make sure that I have this almost in my back pocket, this level of intensity, if you will.
Yeah, I feel like that's what it's made me, like on my feet, just like more intense, more forward, like putting the pressure on, and I feel like that's helped a lot.
Well, you have your eyes set on trials coming up in Poznan in Poland. Is there anything else that you've kind of set your focus on, or is that kind of your singular goal now at the moment for jiu-jitsu, that is?
I've got PANS coming up in a few weeks, actually, so that's a goal. And also Worlds at the very start of June.
How do you handle kind of traveling and kind of going between each major competitions like this? Because it's something that fascinates me, is that we have some people who kind of, they'll set one competition and they'll set it themselves quite a distance away from the competition. Is that their singular goal? Whereas you'll see other people and they'll be kind of moving from, you know, big competition to big competition. And how do you handle that? Is it just a matter of just taking each one as it comes?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think it's just like, when you do like people feel like, oh, you compete a lot, but I actually don't think like I compete that much. I think competition is like one of the best ways to test yourself, and it's the biggest eye opener for your game, I guess. So that's why I kind of like to do competitions and like not just set one singular goal where like there's a big space apart, because I just think competing, it's like, I don't know, it's like 10 training sessions wrapped into one for me. It's like, you know, it's like you doing it under pressure, and you're like, here's a weakness, here's a weakness, here's what I need to fix. And it just like, you know, it's also new people sometimes, so it's like a different style of fighting that you might have not had in competition before, or you might not get in your gym. And it's like, as long as you don't spread yourself too thin, or you don't bite off more than you can chew with competing, like doing like, I don't know, loads and loads and loads and loads, whereas, so you're not fighting at your optimum. If you do like a few big ones, maybe a warm-up one before it, I think, yeah, you'll be good.
And have you always had this kind of joy of competing, like enjoying it and enjoying the testing nature of it? Or is that something that as you've grown up, it's kind of built up? Have you always been this competitive?
Oh, yeah. Extreme. Everyone in my family, actually, we're all really, really competitive. So, like, yeah, when the game of life or frustration or, like, Monopoly comes out, everyone's on it. But, yeah, just competing, I've always, like, liked it. I feel like when I was younger, I loved to win. Like, I loved winning. Whereas I'd always get, like, quite stressed out prior to the competition. Like, mm-hmm. on the day, like, I wouldn't enjoy as much leading up to it, I guess. Like, you know, the nerves you get before your fight. But then once I won, I was like, yeah, I love it. I want to do it again. But now I guess I enjoy the preparation more. Like, Euros was one of the first tournaments in a while where I just didn't really feel... I felt more excited and I was enjoying it a lot more than usual. And I think, yeah, as soon as I get back into the swing of competition, because obviously there was the pandemic and I had a massive break, but as soon as I got into the swing of it, yeah, I enjoyed the whole process of just competing more. And I'm back to just like really enjoying it and loving it.
There's something great about Monopoly and competitive families, I do have to say.
I don't know.
Is that,
yeah,
is there someone like, who's a particular winner?
Me.
Is that just because you're the only one who can actually say that right this second, or is that
probably
is that the truth?
It depends on the game, to be honest. I mean, we do have some cheaters in our family. Cough, cough, my little sister.
Ooh.
Zuri.
Controversial.
Yeah.
Don't let her be the banker.
No, don't let. If you have cards, if you have like the money, yeah, you don't want to let her get too close. Or my mum, actually, for a matter of fact. Those two, you have to keep your eye out when you're playing the game, because they'll always be like to move themselves along a few more spaces. But yeah.
Honestly, you can't. This is why, at least with jiu-jitsu, you know that, like, well, I guess you can cheat at jiu-jitsu. People do cheat sometimes, but yeah. Realistically, there's only one way to cheat, and that's just faking a tap, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, those people. It's annoying when like the ref didn't see it, but then at a different angle, they blatantly tapped, and you're just like, oh, it's crazy.
Like, I understand that sometimes there are moments where, you know, someone's trying to grab something and it feels like a tap.
Yeah,
totally get it, it happens. But mm-hmm. when you see a clear, like, there's nothing else they're doing but like slapping your leg to try and get out, to try and stop it, and then they just kind of sit up into your guard and they're like, what?
Mm-hmm. And you're like, did you not just like, you can feel the slaps, and you're like, am I going crazy? It's like gaslighting, but jiu-jitsu make you feel like you're going insane.
Oh my god, that's such a great description.
Literally.
The gaslighters of jiu-jitsu, the fake tappers.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
you're like, definitely. And they're like, no, I didn't tap. And you're thinking, now you're thinking to yourself, like, what? Did they not tap? Did I?
Should I have held on to that longer? No, did I mess that up?
Exactly.
See,
Because I feel like the worst feeling is probably like injuring someone, because you know, like at the end of the day, like you don't actually want to, like, oh, for me at least, I don't want to hurt anyone. Like, I want to win, but I don't want anyone to have to get like carried off the mat. Like, no. So then just like, if I feel as half, I'll let go.
Well, exactly that. I mean, I came across this at the Brighton Open two weekends ago. There were two, and these were white belts, to put this into perspective. One guy was put in a Kimura, and we were turning away because we were thinking this is going to pop. And then the ref stopped the fight, or it's the fight got stopped. And the guy goes, I didn't tap. And the ref's like, look, these are adults. And the coach is saying, his coach is saying to him, look, you would have tapped, it was over. And then he says to his coach, no, if it breaks, it breaks. You're a white belt adult competing on the Brighton Open.
Yeah, some people have, the scariest thing is people who have that mindset in training as well. It's just like, oh, that, who have that mindset in general, because it's like, there's no point risking your body for, like, you know, a little metal medal at the Brighton Open, or just so you could say you beat this person in a round. Like, it's just like, you know, you've got to think, use your head. I feel like, obviously, it's a fighting sport, I guess, you know, it could get, you know, ego, pride, heated, but there's just no point. It's like, what do you realistically gain? Like, you're not gaining any more knowledge, you're just harming yourself and potentially taking you out of training. There's no point. Like, if there's a submission on, just tap, and then, I don't know, go to your coach after and be like, how do I get out of it? How do I avoid it? And then also, if you get caught in a submission, like, or a specific one, you know, you become so conscious of it, especially, and it's in your mind, that, you know, you're probably less likely to get caught in it again. So it's just going to help for your evolution, you know, and that way you don't get injured and you can just learn.
I use the analogy.
Getting your arm broken for what?
It's true. I use the analogy, like, what are you going to go home? Let's say that person's got like a partner and their kids, like, you've got your arm broke and you go home. Let's say, even if you won, like, you, the likelihood is, if you're, even if you carried on fighting with a broken arm, dislocated shoulder, whatever it may be, you're probably not going to win that fight. And lo and behold, that guy didn't win the fight. But what are you going to go home and tell your wife and kids? Oh man, yeah, ruined that guy. Yeah, I didn't tap, broke my arm.
Literally. I feel like it'll be, even if your biggest concern is, I guess, pride and ego, wouldn't it be more, what's it called? Wouldn't it be more, like, I guess, harmful to your pride, or more embarrassing if you got, like, your arm broken and you're getting carried off, than just tapping and, you know, learning for next time?
It's embarrassing enough when you accidentally get injured on the mat and the medics have to see to you. Like, I've been there and, like, I didn't like it. It's everyone's eyes are on you. So the medics are trying to check, and you just want to be like, please just take me away. Can we just not do this in another room?
I feel like the worst one is, like, if you, like, you kind of injure yourself, like, you poke yourself in the eye or knee yourself in the mouth. Like, I've done that so many times, where I've poked my own eyes or I've kneed myself, and I'm just like, that's the peak embarrassment, because it's like they're fighting me and I'm fighting me. It's two against one.
What's there, is that those, they're those moments where you've kind of hurt yourself, and then you're in the middle, and then your opponent's trying to do something to you, and you've got to literally fight, like, one-eyed and stop someone passing guard.
Like, I'm shutting one eye and they're like, you're okay, did I do something? I'm like, no, it was me. And don't worry about it, it was me, I poked my own eye. I do that a lot, actually.
How do you, I can understand, maybe in the gi, I can understand that a bit more. If you're trying to, like, strip grips, you might kind of accidentally, like, thumb yourself in the eye, maybe.
Yeah, that was, it was the last time I poked myself in my eye, it was no gi, actually.
It was no gi?
Yeah, I was training, and I was like, one second, I just poked myself in the eye. I don't even know how I did it, to be honest. It just happened, and I was just, like, clutching my eye for a second, and, like, blinking a lot. I don't even know, to be honest. But
you're the John Jones of jiu-jitsu, even though John Jones does it to other people, whereas you do it to yourself.
I do it to myself. Gosh, I'm a bit clumsy. That's the thing. I do like jiu-jitsu, and you're supposed to have like the best coordination or control of your body. I'm clumsy, very.
Are you, how clumsy are we talking? Are we talking like you accidentally drop your phone, or like, please don't throw anything at me?
No, I think like catch is like I drop my phone, or if I'm going up the stairs, like I fall up the stairs.
Like, are you a runner? Are you a like I can't walk up the stairs person?
No, I just be walking casually, and I'll trip wow. over my own feet up the stairs, or accidentally stack. I don't even know how it just happens.
Blame it on the teenagers.
Yeah,
my auntie always said that like teenagers are clumsy because they're still growing, so they think their legs are one length, and then they go for a walk and they've grown overnight, and so they just trip over themselves.
I think it's the way I walk as well. Like, I always wear down the sides of my shoes because I think I walk on the side. It's kind of weird. Like, the corners and the heel always gets wear down. I'm always having to get new school shoes because I walk, like, on the edge. It's really strange.
Maybe this is, like, this become more prominent. Now you're doing more wrestling. If, like, do you wear wrestling boots or do you do it barefooted?
I've only worn wrestling boots, like, twice, but I prefer to do it just barefoot because it's like jiu-jitsu's barefoot. So
if you're finding that like the sides of your feet are particularly worn down after wrestling, then you know what the problem is.
I think it's wrestling. There's like a medical term for it, like how you turn out your feet. I forgot what it's called though, but yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like natural, but just subconscious, I guess.
I found out, and I don't know how true this is, but a family member who does jiu-jitsu is flat-footed, and they were saying that apparently De La Riva works even better if you're flat-footed.
Oh, does it?
I don't know if that's true or not, and I'm yet to test it with them, but apparently they were saying that if you get the De La Riva hook in, if you're flat-footed, something about it means it is far harder to remove the De La Riva hook. I don't know if that's true. It feels like a bit of a kind of
a bit of a reach.
Big leap. Yeah, a bit of a reach. But you never know. Feet are important to jiu-jitsu.
I don't know anyone with flat feet personally, I think. So I can't confirm or deny, especially one that does jiu-jitsu. But if you test it out, let me know.
I'll test it out. Or if you come across someone and you go, they've got a really good De La Riva guard, maybe just kind of take a quick look and see.
Just take a quick look and be like, are you just flat-footed?
Are you flat-footed?
Are you?
Is that why you're so good at it? Oh, the joys. As the final bit of the interview, what we always do is a quick fire round. It's like some nice and easy questions, some serious, some less so serious, to finish off the interview.
Okay.
So the first one is nice and easy. Acai, yay or nay?
Yay/nay. I don't like granola. So if it's just plain acai, then yay.
Do you know what? I think that's the first non-granola one we've had. We've had a few like non-peanut butters, but
I'm allergic to nuts, so.
No, we can't hold that against you then.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
I just like I like the smoothness. As long as it's really smooth, then yay.
So what do you have on top of it then? Does that mean no toppings? Maybe some banana, that's it?
If I'm feeling a bit adventurous, maybe some banana. But usually I just have it plain.
Oh man, I hope they cut the cost. I hope that's cheaper than like acai with
the
toppings.
They usually charge extra for toppings, so
yeah, I hope so, because that feels cruel. That feels cruel against people who've got peanut allergies.
Exactly.
Something you wish you could tell your younger self. Obviously you are still young, but you know, in comparison.
I can't, oh my gosh, I'm really bad at cook fun questions. just have fun, just enjoy everything as it comes. Have more fun, yeah.
Where you like to relax, what do you do in your when you're not studying ridiculously hard A level subjects or doing amazingly at jujitsu, what do you do to relax?
Sketching or sleeping.
there's nothing wrong with a good nap, but I can't profess to have any artistic skills.
Yeah, what I really kind like of sketching.
Are you kind of like, have you done any kind of, oh, I'm going to sketch something when I'm waiting to compete? Or is this kind of something you do away, nothing jujitsu related at all?
Sometimes in the car on the way to competitions or on the plane or just on the train to training. That's what, like in the summer on the train to training, just sketching on the train. But then I kind of stopped because people would always like, oh, what are you sketching? And they try and talk to you about it. Like, leave
me alone. This is my personal time.
This is my time. No, I get really spooked when like strangers talk to you on the train. So I'm just like, oh, okay.
It's pretty weird, isn't it? Like,
because it could just be anyone. So I'm just like, oh, okay, hi.
Nah. Maybe if that person has a dog, I might trust them a little more. But that's about it.
Yeah, if the dog's like one of the dogs I like, though.
What kind of dog would they have that you wouldn't talk to them?
Oh, if they got on the train with like a Rottweiler, like, don't speak to me.
Rottweilers are cute.
No, scary.
Yeah. Oh no, they get a bad rep. They're nice dogs.
I find them scary. Or like, I'm not a big fan of pit bulls either.
Misunderstood dogs. They're just associated with a bad type of person. That's it.
I like huskies and Alaskan Kikais and those ones.
Oh, okay. You like a fluffy dog, don't you?
Yeah, I like fluffy dogs. Big fluffy dogs.
Yeah. Only problem is they molt like crazy.
Okay, that's true. Not in my house, but yeah.
True.
As long as, you know, you could just give them a cuddle for a bit, I don't mind.
Yeah. At university, they have, I have it on good authority that they have like visits from the well-being dogs where like they bring the dogs to campuses, and because it's like a stressful period of your life, you like they have these days where they just bring dogs and you can go for a cuddle.
Our school has like a comfort like stroke anxiety dog called Lola.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And we always see like the head teacher or one of like the deputy heads walking it around school. Or walking her around school.
I'm totally here for kind of relaxation and kind of anxiety dogs. But I caveat that with when people go, oh, this is my anxiety peacock or horse. I'm not having that.
Anxiety horse.
Maybe horse riding relax you, fine, but I'm not having that some random animal is your anxiety animal. I just don't believe it.
An anxiety bird, that would be funny.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not.
Dogs before, I've never heard of other animals, usually just dogs.
I don't know if this is like, I just got stung by like Facebook misinformation, but I saw this very short, it was either on Instagram or Facebook. But it was like a video and someone's taking legit a peacock on a plane and they were like, oh, it's because it's my personal like well-being peacock.
Work peacock. No, I don't know. I didn't know how seriously I could take that one. Or if I was sitting next to that person on the plane and they just had a peacock, I'd be like, can I move seats, please? I'd probably take a photo of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah, ask them move seats.
Make a quick sketch, take a quick picture because no one will believe you, and then move on.
Yeah, literally, just so I can be like, yeah, guys, they actually had a peacock on the plane.
Do you have a hidden talent or one thing that people don't know? Like, do you do Rubik's? We've had like Rubik's cubes, whistles, everything. Is there something that you have a hidden talent?
Gosh, I don't think so. Yeah, sometimes I'm like, people are, it was like a shock to my teachers, my maths teachers, because I was really bad at like the shape transformations in maths in secondary school. And they're like, oh, you probably can't draw. And then I pulled out my sketchbook and they were like, oh my gosh. But yeah, I don't think I have any hidden talents, unfortunately.
They're all open talents, but unhidden talents. You may or may not be too not already on the caffeine, but if you are, like, what's your coffee shop order?
Oh, I don't drink coffee.
It's probably best. What the addiction will come later.
I like frappuccinos, but no coffee.
Is that just milk?
No, it's caramel frappuccinos or
okay.
Caramel frappuccino or Oreo cookies and cream frappuccinos, but no coffee.
You're the only guest that I won't hold it against, because like coffee addiction should come later rather than younger.
I'm trying to make sure, like, get as far along, I guess, before I have to
fall into wait till university comes.
Oh gosh, yeah, those dissertations and stuff.
Yeah,
I might turn to the dark side after that, but.
It starts with like, oh, I have a caramel frappuccino with a shot of coffee in. And before you know it, you're having like, I'll just have a black coffee, please.
Oh, no, I hope I don't get to that.
It depends. Do you come from a family? Is your mum and dad or other people in the house or family drinkers?
No one in my family drinks coffee.
No one.
Like, people come over and they're like, we'll have a coffee. And we're like, no, we don't have any. I love peppermint tea. I love peppermint and chamomile tea. Because I don't even drink normal tea. I just drink peppermint and chamomile.
Yeah, this is some clean living. I don't know.
I think it's just the drinking.
It's just no tea. Just no caffeine at all.
No caffeine. Caffeine free.
That's crazy. Favorite food?
Jerk chicken.
Home cooked? Well, I mean, isn't mum's always the best, but home cooked or out?
Home cooked, 100%.
It's always the way. It's mum's food and then like grandparents' food and then like aunties and uncles, right?
Top tier. Yep.
Dream ADCC or IBJJF? Well, this one's difficult because you have been... Okay, IBJJF Black Belt World Champion or ADCC Champion?
Well, what would I rather be?
Yeah.
No, they're both, like, in my top two, three.
Yeah.
Can I not...
Essentially, no gi or gi. Well, I guess you have the option of gi in IBJJF World Champion, but you don't have that in ADCC.
I want to be
too hard.
They're both like, I've wanted to win ADCC and I want to get my black belt and win worlds.
It's the Sophie's choice of questions.
Oh, this is the hardest one so far. Maybe I guess worlds if I get to take open weight with it. But if it's just if it's just weight division, then ADCC. But yeah, if it's open class and my weight gold, then IBJJF Worlds. But if it's just weight division, then ADCC.
I mean, hopefully we'll see ADCC women's weight categories completely change in the next few years. We can hope.
That would be nice. You know, if God willing, I get the ticket this round. Yeah, it's literally because obviously I will never make under 60. I can't ever see that happening. So it's just like over 60. And then
it's just crazy that like you get your ticket first round and it's like, oh, Gabby Garcia.
I mean, you just got to go out and give it your best shot. Go out and try and put on a show. But
it's been done before.
It's been done before, you know? Just... Yeah, go out and give it your best shot. You've got nothing to lose. She's won it how many times? So
exactly. If anything, right, she should not give you a bye, but she'll be more relaxed.
Yeah, hopefully she'll like underestimate you, think nothing of it, and then you know you can go out and shock the world.
Exactly. And the final question is, if someone were to play you in a movie, who would it be and what kind of movie would it be?
Oh. A movie about my life.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it would be probably, yeah, a comedy. A comedy. Probably. Does it have to be an actor or just anyone?
We could do an actor and then we can do like a random person. You can have best of both if you want.
Okay, so if an actor had to be me, gosh, I don't know. I think I think Marseille Martin's pretty cool.
It's a good choice.
Yeah. So if it was like any random person and they had to be me in a movie, probably my sister, because she's quite similar to me.
How good of an impression does she do of you?
Oh, pretty decent. I think it's because my dad always says this, like, not our voices, but the stuff we come out with. Like, he's like, you guys talk in your own little language. Like, we'll have conversations and like nobody else will get what's going on or could understand the train of the conversation, because we'll talk about our own little random things and just have our own little phrases in. But yeah.
Is there a top catchphrase between you and your sister? Is there something that only you two say to each other?
There's so many. It's always changing. It's always changing. Like, we'll always have one thing that we'll see each other and we'll say, like, if it's like a meme or something that's like made us laugh. And like, whenever we see each other in school, we'll say it to each other, like, there's this meme and it goes like in this American accent, it's really high-pitched voice, and it's like, are you new here? Yeah.
Yeah.
So like every time I see her in school, I'm just like, are you new here? And everyone's like, what are you guys talking about? But yeah.
I can so imagine your dad just being like, really? What's going on?
What? Or we'll say it to them. We'll just start laughing and they'll be so confused.
It's great doing that to your parents though. When they're laughing, when they're just like, but I don't, what's so funny about that? And it just makes it even funnier.
Oh, but then sometimes, like, my parents are quite quick, so they kind of catch on. So then they start using it back at us, and that's when it shakes us, because we're like, we're like, who taught you this? And we're like, oh, wait, it was us.
Debating like, whether,
oh, is they this, listen more than I think they do. And then they start using it back, and I'm just like, excuse you, this is, no, you're not part of the joke.
There's an age limit on this joke. Okay,
that's why I say to them, I was like, you're too old for this joke. Or like they'll say certain words that we say and I'm like, you're too old, you know, that it caps off at 20, you can't use it anymore.
Careful, 20 be at you before you know it. And then
terrified. They're like, oh, you're gonna be an adult, you're gonna have adult responsibilities and feels. And I was like, what? I'm not looking forward to that at all. I want to go back to being a little kid. I want to go back to primary school, mate.
given how you've taken everything in your stride so far, I think you'll be just fine.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Well, there's no better way to end an interview. Thank you so much for coming on, and we wish you all the best for Pan Ams and Worlds and ADCC trials.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. To keep up to date with all our latest stuff, follow us at The Prodigy Podcast on Instagram.